It may not be over mathematically, but I think we all know Norwich City are heading back to the Championship, sadly. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, coming to you on the back of a 1-0 defeat to Brighton, the fifth successive defeat since the Premier League season resumed for Norwich City. We'll try and keep things light as much as possible, but clearly, in the circumstances, that isn't going to be hugely possible. We also come to you on Future Radio 107.8 FM. I'm Dave Freezer, and I'm alongside Paddy Davitt and Connor Southwell. We're just out of Carrow Road from the behind-closed-doors fun of that 1-0 win. Paddy, you've not long ago spoken to Daniel Farker, and he basically admitted it was over, didn't he?
He did, Dave. He said, remember what he said, it was the last chance to get back in the mix. That was his exact words. So if you take him by his measure, then the chance is gone. We saw those players, quite a lot of them dropped to the floor at the final whistle. They clearly felt it was the last chance. Todd Cantwell pointedly stayed on the turf all by his own quite a long period after the final whistle, when all the other players had departed and coaching staff. So yeah, the signals, the messages, the sound bites coming out of that camp after that defeat, sadly, are that is it. Not mathematically, as you said at the top of the record, but that'll probably come in due course over the next few days, and then it has to be the fight back and looking forward. But very depressing. They've gone with a whimper, haven't they? You know, like you said, they're five straight defeats. I mean, they're consistently poor. Give them that. And then even broaden it out, you know, to the pre-lockdown, you know, one league goal in nine games is getting on for a good chunk of the season, you know, nearly a third of the season. And with those type of stats, then is it any wonder that five games out and they're effectively down? And that it's a sad way to end, because we all felt at the start of the season as well, having come up as they did so vibrantly, that they could really have a good crack. But you know, today's game, the manner of that defeat, what Farker said before the game as much as what he said after the game, you know, I think there's been a realisation that they haven't been good enough in enough of the areas you need to be, setting aside the obvious byproduct of terrible injuries to key players. But fundamentally, and I think today underlined it, and Farker did actually go on to say post-match that summed up the season, they didn't have enough quality. You know, there was a lot of endeavour. You couldn't really fault them for work or application, but simply put, they didn't have enough quality in either end of the pitch, and they were culpable in their own downfall in terms of Brighton's match winner. And when they did get anywhere near the other end of the pitch, they just do not look like a team capable of scoring goals, and that's not a great combination. And ultimately, that is why they're probably going to finish a long way short at the bottom of the table.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what to make of this line that Daniel has repeated quite a few times now, in terms of we don't have that cutting edge, we can't finish teams off, we haven't got the quality of that top end of the pitch, we don't have, you know, one player who can win games for us. You know, if you're one of the players, it's probably not going to fill you with confidence, is it? And that's how, like you say, there has been a fair bit of willing. I wouldn't say they've, you know, just given up. They haven't downed tools, and, you know, it's not like he's lost the dressing room, they're all bickering and fighting and things like that. But it feels like overall the whole group has accepted they haven't got the quality to stay up, and Daniel has kind of added to that along this journey. So that's, I don't know, maybe a slightly different tact would have been better. But from all, I guess it feels so bad, Connor, because we did come into this season with pretty high hopes that squad, you know, they were quite sort of swashbuckling in the Championship, weren't they? They played with freedom and great attacking verve, and they, you know, that was one of the best seasons in the club's history, certainly at that level. And so now it feels like a real come down, doesn't it? That they're not just going down with a whimper, but they're going to struggle to even get the points tally that the 2005 Worthy team and the 2014 Houghton team got. That was 33 points. They need to get 12 points in the last five games just to equal that. I mean, none of us would have predicted that, would we?
No, I don't think anyone would have. There were a few people perhaps a little bit too optimistic in their predictions, I would argue. But yeah, look, it's clear to everyone, I think, that this season as a whole hasn't gone as it panned. I think clearly with hindsight, the decisions perhaps to strengthen contracts rather than invest in the transfer market, you could argue perhaps haven't panned out in the way they would have liked. And Equally, the players that they did go out and recruit clearly haven't made the impact that they wanted, maybe beyond Sam Byram. So there will be a post-mortem and there will be sort of a soul search, I guess, to some extent. But the key for me, and you mentioned it there, is the honesty. And so much was made of the honesty and how positive it is. But I think the last few weeks we've seen perhaps what a negative impact sometimes honesty can have, and maybe sometimes being a little bit optimistic and not blind optimism. It's important to be realistic, but I think we've seen that translate into the team a little bit. This is an Norwich team that's a lot more pragmatic, that has a bit more variation. The fullbacks don't push as high up the pitch, and they've kind of, yeah, it just feels like they've kind of accepted their level a little bit. And it's going to be a huge rebuild, essentially, because you've got a squad of players. Some will think they're good enough for the Premier League. Some the club will try and call upon them again for a campaign in the Championship after perhaps they've not been involved too much this year. So it's going to be a very interesting summer in terms of the dynamics of that squad and how they churn it, because naturally they'll want to change some aspects of it, and probably rightly so after what we've seen this season. But yeah, I think we probably all expected a better level of performance, maybe not necessarily results, but definitely a better level of performance more consistently than we've seen this season. And I think probably we all thought they possessed a bit more quality than what we've seen this season, and I think that's probably the shame for me. And you can dissect it tactically or analytically all you want, but the stats pad as real there is a pretty damning, and they underline why they're heading back to the Championship. But now it's going to be all about the response and how they respond to that, and to make sure that this relegation isn't the same as those that have gone before it, where they need to change and essentially rebrand themselves again. So it kind of feels like next year is going to be pivotal, really, for obviously the club as they try and push back to the Premier League, but equally Stuart Webber, Daniel Farker and this whole sporting director model, because they're not going to be underdogs anymore. That's clear as well, which is a lot of what this success has been based off. So there are a lot of interesting dynamics and elements to it, I think. But yeah, right here, right now, I think for a lot of Norwich City supporters, it definitely hurts.
Yeah, there really are loads of different angles to this, which are going to be fascinating moving forward. And I like what you said there, a soul search. I think that's probably underway for quite a few. You know, Webber and Farker particularly, I'm sure, will be looking inwardly and thinking about what they need to do differently. Someone asked me in the live updates pad whether Farker had lost the dressing room. Now, I said to them that I think that's kind of just an easy thing to throw at a squad that's being relegated. I didn't necessarily feel that was what it was, but obviously in a relegation campaign they're going to have fallings out, aren't they? There's going to be arguments. As a fan, you would almost want there to be, because that shows that they care. I mean we'll probably get more of an answer in this next five games, but I don't feel right now like Daniel's lost the dressing room in that traditional way.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to break down what that translates to. I mean, is it a team who are getting hammered every week? Well, you know, Southampton aside, you wouldn't say that is a measure you could apply. I mean, is it, you know, players showing dissent on the pitch or arguing and bickering with each other or in turn with the coaching staff? We're not really seeing that. And I personally wouldn't feel that is something you could probably lay at Farker and this group of players. I think even today, you know, the first 20-25 minutes they were as good as Brighton were, and that's not hugely much to say, because neither side really created a huge amount, but it wasn't a team who were, you know, basically not carrying out their manager's instructions. They had their shape. You could see what they were trying to do. I think it basically comes down to confidence, essentially, and a huge lack of, and the belief. And we saw it midweek. Daniel said, actually accused them of feeling sorry for themselves after Tim Krul's error. He said for that 15-20 minute spell, and that was why he made the triple change at the break, because he felt he needed to send his group of players a signal. It's almost, as he said, find that aggressiveness again, which he felt they had started the game with. And I felt today was more of the same. As soon as Tim closes, played a very strange pass infield, has been overturned, they've countered, scored. That was it. You saw any lingering confidence they had in that first 15-20 minutes just completely drain out of them after that point. You know, bar Adameda hitting the post with a header late on, they were poor. They were poor. second best across midfield, you know, at the top end of the pitch. Dermich, whatever you think about whether he should be in the side and what he brings or doesn't bring, was isolated, didn't have a great deal of service. And I think that just stems from, and we've touched on it already, you know, a group of players, they're not daft. They know how this season has declined, and it's just picked up pace, and it's almost like they can't put a line in the sand or turn things around. It's almost as if they're, you know, bystanders in this drama that's playing out around them, and they haven't managed to you know, find that result or that performance or that seam of results to really give them the belief and the confidence, because that, at any level of the game, the confidence is a massive thing. Let's go back to this time last season in terms of the season. You know, they were scoring for fun, they were creating chances, they were playing teams off the park, and I know it's a different level, that's the caveat to everything we discuss here, but you know, the same players who were full of confidence and would try things, you know, you're not seeing, for me, there's a lot of safe play going on now. You know, there's a lot of players who don't really want to twist for fear of, you know, being singled out as, you know, why are you trying to do that, why has that not come off, getting more criticised. They just look like a very inhibited bunch of players, and that simply comes from losing games every week, not scoring goals, not really creating chances. So I think those would be the areas I'll be looking at, rather than maybe accusing the players of downing tools for Farker. I don't see that at all, because the majority of those players owe Farker for having a shot at the Premier League, don't they? And in the case of the younger players, owing a shot in Norwich's first team at such a very early age in their careers. So I wouldn't necessarily look in that area. I think it's more the as I say, the debilitating drip-by-drip effects of playing in a league where you come up against, let's be honest, better players and sadly too often better teams. And that's what it boils down to. We've seen those traits before. We referenced the seasons when Norwich have gone down before, and it was very similar. You know, you get to a point, I remember under Alex Neil, you know, they were bang in it, weren't they, up until about January. Then they went to Stoke, Gary O'Neill got sent off that night, and then for love nor money, it didn't matter what Alex Neil did, what players he played, what systems, they just were on this long, slow, sad trudge back to the Championship, and they couldn't arrest that slide. And unfortunately for me, we've seen a parallel with this Daniel Farker team.
Yeah, I agree with the vast majority of that. Confidence is just such a massive thing. I think Pukki is kind of the prime example of that at the moment, isn't he? You think back to last year, that winner against Millwall, you know, he'd scored a 96-minute winner, was it? And he knew nothing about it. Just sort of went in, deflected in off his thigh or whatever, and the goal at QPR that went in off his chest because it just cannoned in off him, and he managed to sort of turn it in. Everything he touched or looked at turned to goals last year. And now, it's classic sort of striker play, isn't it? That when they haven't got confidence, strikers look useless, don't they? And you just feel sorry for the poor guy, because you know he's got far more in the tank than what we're seeing at the moment. But collectively, yeah, it doesn't take, when you're in the best league or probably the most competitive league in the world, it doesn't take much more than a few percentage points to be off what you're capable of to just not be able to be competitive in the Premier League. So, I think we'll come back round to the sort of bigger issue towards the end, but let's get stuck into the game. Four changes, Connor. Dermich, Duda, Hernandez, and who was the other one? Closer, of course. Come back into the team in place of Tribal, Rupp, Campwell, and Pukki. Now, before the game, people weren't impressed with that team selection, were they? And I think that was probably justified.
Yeah, I think so. Although I would caveat that with, I think whenever either one of Todd Cantwell or Emi Buendia isn't the team, I think that tends to be the reaction, doesn't it? And probably because without them, Norwich don't particularly, or they look toothless, frankly, in terms of how they attack teams. But yeah, I get it, because there's so many games in such a short space of time, and I think Daniel had a point, and obviously he's witness to sports science data and much more sort of knowledge about the physical condition than we are.
He's seen what they're doing in training, Neil.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I think if he says that, then there's no reason to sort of think otherwise. I think Hernandez in bursts has looked pretty lively since the restart. Again, it's just you question his decision making at key
moments.
Let's
not let Paddy get started on that.
That's a very good point. But I think there were elements of it that made sense. Clearly they wanted to attack the game, and Brighton play with a 4-4-2 essentially, or a 4-2-2-2, so he clearly wanted to try and get an overload in midfield, hence why he went back to the 4-2-3-1. But yeah,
have you ever seen anyone play with a 4-2-2-2 before? Because I don't remember it.
No, I think this is one of the fancy sort of Graham Potter quirks. He likes playing with that, although it sort of changes. So
most formations do now, don't they?
Yeah,
they're all semantics almost.
They're all variations of 4-4-2, aren't they, really? So
even 4-2-3-1 is.
Exactly. So I mean they're all variations of another, so it's just how you interpret them, I guess. But it was just as Paddy said, a team short of confidence, I think, and that has sort of seeped out, hasn't it, into Timi Pukki, who again, as you said, just had to look at the ball and different areas like that. So it's really difficult for them at the moment to change the tide a little bit. And I think Paddy's spot on when he said they feel like everything's happening around them. They've got no one who can impact the game in particular, and it does kind of feel like, and it kind of looks at the moment, and again a lot of it is because of the games in a short space of time, but it just kind of feels like he's throwing paper at a wall and seeing what sticks essentially, and he's trying to go back to what they were good at in terms of the 4-2-3-1 and what brought them success, and now they can't get a result with that, and so it's incredibly difficult, I think, for a head coach to try and impact a game or tactically set something up when you've got players who are short of belief, and I think that's evident at the moment. And Paddy's right, there's so much safe play even from the fullbacks, where they would push on with the ball and they would be willing to engage a winger and get past them to break a press. Now that's not the case. Now they want to come back and they want to play, and you know, you look the best player in the world if you play 5-yard passes all the time. You've got to try and penetrate and make something happen, and at the moment there doesn't seem to be too many players willing to sort of grab the game by the scruff of the neck and impact it, and that's a real issue. But it's also born because of the lack of confidence, and it happens for so many teams at the bottom end of the table. It's just a shame, because when I think back to August and you remember the attacking displays against Chelsea and Newcastle, and you thought, okay, they're going to give it a real good go. They're going to concede a lot of goals. We probably all knew that. They did last season, but they were going to give it a real good go. And now that sort of defensive instability has been matched up with them being unable to score, essentially. And that's sort of the fatal mix, I think, in the end. So there's a disappointing element to it. You just worry long-term about how damaging this spell will be for them and Daniel Farker in terms of the philosophy and what they're trying to do. But again, this is one of the big soul-searching questions, I guess, that they'll have to answer themselves over the summer and within themselves. So it's there's a lot of issues for that Norwich team at the moment, but ultimately it ends with a relegation, another one, a record-breaking one, and they need to respond to that accordingly. And as I said, I think a lot of what this model's been based about will be tested next year.
Yeah, well, the night is always darkest before the dawn, isn't it? So let's see how dark things are going to get before we get to the dawn, though. Unfortunately, 5 games still to play. It could get quite dark. But I like that they're almost not the protagonists in their own story. Mm. That's pretty grim thinking. But the goal, Pad, a few familiar characteristics, I suppose, conceding the ball, and Godfrey just... You know, we've all talked about the strong points of Godfrey's game, but for me, the positioning is where his role as a centre-back hasn't developed enough so far. And there has been a lot on his shoulders this season, haven't there? But the way that Trossard gets across him there summed it up kind of perfectly, didn't it?
Well, I mean, I'll take you back to 2 games. Burnley away, where I think Chris Wood's got across him at the near post, and West Ham as well away, where he's lost Haller and gone towards the ball, and the ball's been cut back and Haller's got simple tapping, and that was a very similar type of goal today. And you know, I saw a lot of praise for the lad in recent times, but all I'm seeing, if I'm brutally honest, is his decision making needs to be dramatically improved. And you're right, he's such a young man, and he's had too much burden to carry because of the central defensive issues this season for him to be your only at times available or recognisable centre-back, as he was at Arsenal in midweek. Too much to ask of a young kid, you know, really only essentially in his second full season of professional football, let alone in the Premier League. So, you know, you have to really take a step back and filter any analysis of Ben Godfrey through that prism. But, yeah, he's got so much more to go. I mean, athletically, he's a Premier League player. He's a fantastic specimen and good range of passing as well. But his decision making, that needs to improve dramatically. And it's those issues. It's there. It's anticipation. It's you know, the nous to instead of an attacker getting across you, make sure that's the other way around, and just when to make challenges and when not. And we saw that, you know, illustrated graphically against Manchester United. If he doesn't try and steal that ball off Bruno Fernandes, it doesn't get spun in behind, and close is then having to haul down Odion Ighalo and get sent off, completely changed the game. And you know, too often, unfortunately, Ben Godfrey has been guilty of that, and that's all part of his learning curve. And if he can grasp that with more experience and more seasons of Premier League, you're looking at a very, very good young English centre back. But yeah, I mean, go back to today's goal. Yeah, okay, but I would take that back to Closer, who's played that ridiculous pass in field. And then Daniel alluded to it in his post-match, that instead of then dropping off, he's actually gone to press the ball. And of course, then they've left a huge gap on the right-hand side where they've laid the ball into Aaron Moy, who's got all the time in the world to look up, and then face that ball into Trossard to get across Godfrey. So collectively, both Norwich's centre-backs haven't covered themselves in glory there. And it's sad. It's sad for Tim Closer, particularly because he had such a long wait to get back in. And of course, if we take it back to the start of his Norwich career, he was bought to keep that Alec Neil team up in the Premier League, and started in a fashion that you thought this could be an excellent addition. Got injured, missed the business end of the season, Norwich got relegated, and then his next opportunity to get into the Premier League, he gets injured early on, having been injured in pre-season, and has only really come back in. So it's terrible for that lad, because who knows if he'll get another opportunity to play in the Premier League. But you can tell in the games he's come back in that he looks like a player who hasn't played a lot of football in the last 18 months or so, and again, needs of must. And it's not really his fault that he's been thrown in the deep end, but he does look like a player who's probably needs to have been given a more gentle introduction back into the Premier League. But yeah, that's the way it had to be. And you know, when we go swing back round to sort of looking what next, I think one of the things they will have to look at is the recruitment and how they put that squad together. Because okay, you maybe could say, well, hindsight's a wonderful thing, who would have anticipated so many injuries to so many key centre backs? But still, there's other areas of that squad where they look very threadbare, and I think that does reflect poorly on the recruitment, because it isn't down to Daniel Farke what players under this model have been brought to that club. You know, he works with the players he's given. Okay, he has a recommendation of who he wants Stewart to go out and get, but fundamentally, and Stewart's acknowledged this, they haven't backed Daniel well enough. Even with limited funds, I think they could have still got far better recruitment in than he did. And ultimately, whereas you could say the recruitment that they did underpinned that championship title win, Pukki on a free, Buendia plucked on the Spanish second tier, conversely, I think the poor recruitment has hastened their swift departure from the Premier League.
I wonder what would have happened if Ralph Fairman was goalkeeper, Amadou was midfielder, and Roberts was on the wing. Instinctively, I don't think it would have changed things drastically. So I think, yeah, that probably shows that the recruitment hasn't been good enough. Which flows nicely into Andre Duda, Connor. Bluntly, is there any point in him sticking around for the rest of the season? Or may he be just as well going and getting back into the Hertha Berlin squad and getting ready for their pre-season, because he's not going to be a part of next season. Just financially, Norwich wouldn't be able to afford him. I did the player watch on him today, so you know, pinken.com is the place to be if you want to have a closer look at his performance. But nice flashes for me here and there. He's got a good technique, isn't he? But for me, he's just somebody who hasn't adjusted to English football, and he seems too lightweight for English football to me.
Yeah, I'd agree, and no, there's not much point of him sticking around, to be honest. I think in this Norwich side, the focus now needs to turn to next season, really. And I mean, from today's display, I think Adam Eade is a perfect example, really. There's a young lad who you could expose to 5 games of Premier League football. I think he's looked bright in pretty much every game he's come on to. And okay, he might be raw, but frankly, it's not like they're playing for points at this point. So his development, putting 5 games into him, could actually really benefit him going forward. As we've seen before, Murphy's had sort of drips of Premier League football, didn't they, before Norwich went down? So that could be repeated again. But yeah, in terms of Andre Duda, it just hasn't worked out. And probably the lad feels that as well in terms of perhaps what he was brought in to do. It just hasn't delivered, and Norwich have had an issue, I think, probably more generally and more broadly with their entire midfield, but certainly that number 10 position specifically throughout this season. Stiepermann didn't quite make the step up to start with, and Duda certainly not perhaps had the impact that many thought he would, and bought the quality that many thought he would, and I think you're spot on there in terms of every so often there's a nice pass and there's a nice touch, and perhaps there's a nice crossfield ball to a fullback that opens the pitch up a little bit. But in terms of actually influencing a game consistently beyond that Bournemouth debut, there's not been enough from him at all, and there's not enough to suggest that, as you say, that he's got the components necessary to play in the Premier League. And you're right, he'll go back to Hertha Berlin next season. He'll be in and about their squad, and he could do very well. But that season that he had last year, looking increasingly, and again, it's up to him to go back to Germany and prove this, but it's looking increasingly like a little bit of a fluke or a good bit of form, perhaps rather than consistent quality. And that's a shame, because I think there was so much expected of him in a Norwich City shirt. And ultimately, it's not happened, although you could probably argue that as part of a wider team, there's not enough attacking impetus in there generally. But Andre Duda's not worked. I think he should probably focus on his career and go back to Germany, and Norwich should probably cast their eye to next season.
Yeah, I'd rather see Josh Martin get game time than Duda, really. If it's yep. brutal, but what is the point? You know, they've got to start turning their attentions to the future. The moment that summed it up for me, mostly as a number 10, as somebody that needs to be connecting the midfield to the striker. There was a moment where Buendia had done quite well to get the ball to him in the first half, and then he just played an easy ball back to Tetti when he had space behind him, and he should have turned and attacked the box or tried to find Dermic. But instead, it was just an easy pass to Tetti, and the move soon broke down, and Tetti looked like, well, what are you giving it to me for? Mm. It wasn't easy for him coming in. I suppose we should say that as well. They were already at a low ebb when they signed him, but I dare say that loan wasn't a cheap loan, and he would have dictated reasonable wages. So he was one of the three players that came off 67th minute. Pukki, Ida and Cantwell all came on for Duda, Dermic and Hernandez. So let's extend that same thought pattern, Pad, with Adam Ida, who of course hit the post late on, didn't he? He was really unlucky not to get his first Premier League goal. Do you play him more than Dermic? Do you see Dermic being part of this going forward? Because I wouldn't say if Norwich fans are particularly enamoured with his sort of level of commitment during this. I mean, he's worked hard on the pitch, but he's not someone who's dragged Norwich forward, really, is he?
At the minute, he's a better musician than he is a footballer, let's be honest.
Oh, and that's saying something.
That is saying something, but that's about more productivity we've seen from him than in the Norwich shirt, bar one or two flashes in the FA Cup. No, I think with him, from everything you've seen about his career, and again, he's another one who's been beset with injuries, and he had that very good season in the Bundesliga, and maybe that's coloured how subsequently people have viewed him. But he looks to me a sort of lad who needs to be on the end of a regular service from players around him, and very good in the box, a bit more cunning in the box, which is fine maybe in the Championship. If you look now, if we assume that Norwich go back down and were able to dominate games in the fashion they did last season and create so many chances, then he probably scores a lot of goals, and we're probably talking about him as, well, that's a good signing. But in the dynamic they find themselves in this league, where chances are at a premium, and you really need, if you're Norwich trying to bridge the divide, you need to be having forward players who can do something outside the box and link the play and hold the play and give the rest of your team a breather. And obviously Pukki and his pomp gives you that when he's fresh and full of endeavour, but Dermic doesn't appear to have that in his armoury, so he's not in a Premier League environment for Norwich City, I don't think, going to offer too much. So if it's now for these five games, do you play Dermic, you play Ida all day long, Adam Ida for me, because he will offer that physicality to link the play outside the box. And also, we know from his prolific record at age group level, he will score if he gets a chance, and Daniel has alluded to that. He's a natural born goal scorer, Daniel calls it. He calls it that he's got a gift for scoring goals. So given that you're not getting too much from Dermic outside the box, we're certainly not getting anything from him inside the box, what is there to lose, taking Connor's point about as a development bridge into the Championship, where you would think Adamida will be a mainstay of Norwich's attempts to get out of that division again. Play the lad, because with Dermich and his injury record, who's to say that, you know, the start of next season, the grueling nature of the Championship, the incessant sort of Saturday, Tuesday, his body breaks down again, and then he's not an option for you. So let's have a look at Ida, let's have a look at one or two of the other younger players, because I think that's also a signal to your fan base as well, that they will expect now there to be a recognition that we're now looking ahead to next season, and everything we do from here on is with a view to planning for next season. And what better signal/symbol than to have a really exciting young attacking talent like Adamida getting some exposure, because you're basically saying this guy is going to be, we hope, a main player for us next season. And if you're an Norwich fan, I'm sure you'd rather see him leading your line than you would Dermich.
Yeah, and he did hold the ball up quite well when he came on, which is because he's taller than Pukki and Dermich, isn't he? And, you know, he's still developing sort of his frame, I guess. But he looks big and strong, and there was a couple of times when he did well to take the ball in and protect it. And, yeah, as I say, that lovely ball from McLean right at the death, which he did, you know, was quite clever with how he managed to nod it on. And, you know, it would have been a bit weird, I think, wouldn't it, if Norwich had scored at that point, because it would have been like, oh, here's a little positive, and it would have almost just sort of held back the tide a little bit when we all really would have known what was coming.
Yeah, I think so. It would have been great for him to get a Premier League goal, though. But yeah, I think Paddy's spot on in terms of his development. It would be so beneficial to give him essentially an extended pre-season, 5 games in the top flight against top flight defenders, good, competent, able defenders to test himself against. And there's no real reason for me, looking at Josip Dermich since the restart, why Adamida shouldn't be ahead of him. I think in terms of the flashes and the stuff we've seen from him, and you mentioned the physicality, he also stretched the game for me when he came on and opened up a bit more space on Norwich's midfield, although Brighton had dropped significantly deeper. But he certainly did have a positive impact, and however small that is at the moment, they need someone like that, someone who's a bit confident, someone who's a bit capable and a bit able, to maybe a bit naive as well in that sense, in terms of approaching games with an attitude that they can produce something and that they can score. And he looks like he possesses genuine belief that he can score a goal, and that finish was almost instinctive with his head. And Norwich have lacked that, someone perhaps who is willing to have, I mean, Pukki's your obvious guy for that, and when Pukki doesn't fire, then it doesn't look like Norwich do. And if Ida can in the last few games score a couple of goals and add some positive flashes and do his confidence some good, then that's only going to benefit Norwich City in the long run. Forget Adamida. If Adamida's scoring goals, then Norwich City will be doing well. So for me, it's a win-win. And yeah, I think even beyond Adamida, Josh Martin, again, someone who I think we should see some more of in the weeks to come. So there are still positives within this Norwich City group and for the mid to long-term future of it. And I think Adamida plays certainly a crucial role in that long-term future for me. And yeah, to invest in his development now, to me, makes sense, given that there's nothing really to play for in the league anymore.
Yeah, good determination from him as well to get his head on that ball. But the strikers is going to be really interesting to see how that develops, because, you know, it's not certain that Pukki or Dermich are going anywhere this summer, is it? They could, and frankly, they both are capable of being the top scorer in the Championship next year if they were to get a full season. So, you know, up front might be one position that Stuart Webber doesn't have to worry about too much, unless either of them are agitating to leave. You know, Pukki's going to be thinking about maybe the last payday of his career, you know, if a decent offer comes in for him.
Dermich is thinking about the charts.
And the Euros possibly as well, with Dermich with Switzerland. But overall, Norwich had 58% possession, 12 shots to Brighton's 8, and 1 shot on target to Brighton's 2, which was a very weak passed shot from Dermich straight into Matt Ryan's arms. So fair play to Brighton. 36 points, looks like they're going to be safe. They're just very solid. You know, they won that game. It felt like they kept Norwich at arm's length to me, really. They didn't really need to go through the gears to do it. Maybe they lost their way a little bit after they started making substitutions. Maybe they invited Norwich onto them a little bit too much, but I think with their defence, they were fairly confident that they could keep Norwich out. And I guess they're an interesting example, Pat, in terms of maybe where the mindset needs to change for Norwich. I don't know if you agree with me, but they've they've almost tried to do it in an idealist way, haven't they? They're trying to play great football, trying to play lovely attacking football, and that got them out of the Championship in brilliant style. But then they found that the sort of degree of difficulty of nailing that in the Premier League, you're basically trying to play the football that the top teams in the Premier League play as soon as you get there, almost like they're trying to run before they can walk in Premier League terms. If you look at Brighton and Burnley and Palace and teams like that, and the way they grind things out and they have a strong defence, have Norwich maybe got to accept, no matter how sort of begrudgingly, that it's not necessarily the attacking style which is going to get you established in the Premier League? And you know, that means sacrificing a bit of entertainment and a bit of excitement, but it's sort of, it's on record that it works almost.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because what links those two clubs is Chris Hughton, and Chris Hughton was basically you know, lambasted, wasn't he, by the end of his Norwich tenure for that stodgy every team we're playing is like playing Brazil kind of attitude, deferential, you know, grind out the odd 1-0, keep things ticking over. But ultimately it didn't work in terms of keeping that team up, although I know he went just towards the end and then Neil Adams took over, but they were heading south. And it certainly didn't work with the fan base, who wanted something a bit more ambitious and entertaining. So, but then, of course, conversely, then he did manage to get Brighton out of the division, looked to be establishing them, and then maybe the similar sort of feelings around the Brighton fan base or the Brighton ownership, because he was jettisoned, wasn't he? And they've gone down this route of bringing in a guy in Graham Potter who has a very similar footballing philosophy to Daniel Farker in terms of how he believes the game should be played. So, you know, that probably underlines you can't be too idealistic. You can't really go solely down the Hughton route and be this stodgy, functional, attritional type of team and try and establish yourself that way. But by the same token, if you try and go too purist, maybe you end up where Norwich are.
Purist, yeah. Yes.
And the reality is, you look at our Brighton team today, and OK, Potter has a way how he wants to play, but he also has Lewis Dunk at the back, he has Matt Ryan, Dan Burn, solid sitters, and he brings on Duffy, you know, solid Premier League-grade defensive options who will give his teams that base for which then they can maybe develop and evolve and bring that more technical elements to their creative play. And to give Daniel his due, you know, he said it again in the last few days when he was talking about the defensive injuries. He realised that. He realised at the start of the season that they needed to be defensively solid. They needed to have that base. And then from that, you can then build and you can put more floors on the house. And sadly, I know it feels like we keep going back to them, but you know, when you haven't got closer, when you haven't got Zimmerman, when you haven't got Hanley for long periods of time, and you're reliant on Ben Godfrey plus Alex Tete, for example, then there's no way. It doesn't matter what Pep Guardiola could have been in charge with those player injuries at Norwich, and they wouldn't have been any more solid defensively or any more better in an offensive. And that's not absolving Daniel Farker of blame, because you know, he said himself again on Friday he will get stick, and he has had stick, and he deserves stick, because you know, there are plenty of examples where he has been found out a little bit, I feel, even with the cards he's been dealt. But fundamentally, I think he understood you needed a bit of a pragmatic base defensively and then build, but simply hasn't been able to do it because he hasn't had the personnel available. And I think if they do come back again, I think you will, and it's the same characters in charge, certainly at Norwich, then I think that will be one of the things they will look to do. And whether that's you get the recruitment in place, that you have more options, or just you put more of an emphasis on the defensive base, because, and you said it right at the start there, Dave, you know, they're trying to play like the top teams. Well, sadly, and I know there's one anomaly result at Carrow Road against Man City, but by and large, if you try and play the top teams at their own game, there's only going to be one winner. And sadly, you know, 21 points, is it, from 33 games now, tells you that Norwich's approach, injuries aside, hasn't been residually robust or effective. And yeah, they will definitely have to go back down. But I don't think it would be fair to say that Daniel's gone in with this idealistic, blinkered, naive almost approach. I think he realised that if they had any chance, they needed to be defensively solid. And I think ultimately he hasn't had the players fit for long enough to build. I mean, you look at the back end of the Championship season, you know, we could name them. It was Cruel in the back, it was the fullbacks, Aarons and Lewis, and it was Godfrey and Zimmerman. And that base never changed for 16, 17 games, and they just built and built and built, the understanding, the cohesion, and sadly they haven't been able to do anything like that this season.
Yeah, and you could really see it with Godfrey and Zimmerman in particular, couldn't you, in that second half of the season.
From true crime to football, Brexit to folklore. For more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
You know, you've been covering Norwich for a while now, Pat, obviously, and what, four promotions, and this will be a third relegation.
So you're saying I'm a jinx, don't
you? No, not at all. What I'm saying is it's almost like covering two different clubs, isn't it? You think where we were last May and all the highs and excitement of winning the title and all the, you know, sort of historic moments that we were savouring, and then they go back to the Premier League. I almost feel like if they bounce back next year, there is going to be a bit of reticence around in almost like, well, do we want to go back to the Premier League?
Well, I mean, ultimately, you basically look, you want the balcony and open top and Kenny McLean, Lord Mayor, and then you basically want to stay in the Championship again, yeah, and just experience it different almost life, like Groundhog Day, and just keep competing and getting promotion but not actually going up. But obviously we're talking in a rather fanciful notion, because, you know, with promotion comes a crack at the greatest league, inverted commas, in the world. But and ultimately it's the finance, you know, they'll go back down, but the finance that they will have stacked, because they've done it quite prudently, will if they're very astute and they make the right sort of decisions, strategic key business decisions, should set them up for the next 2-3 seasons of trying to get back there again. And ultimately, you know, you can get caught up in the romanticism of it all, but it is at the top level really about getting, if you're a club like Norwich and particularly a self-funded club, it is really getting into the Premier League to get access to that revenue to then try and organically build again, so that you can, you know, the phrase that's always used is the yo-yo, but then eventually you've built stealth by stealth to a degree where you can do a Burnley and can do a Bournemouth, although Bournemouth maybe will drop out this time round. But, you know, Brighton are another example now, where Stoke previously, you know, that it isn't impossible that Norwich could become for a period of time a regular in the Premier League. But sadly, as you referenced there, really from Nigel Worthington's sort of era onwards, successive teams, managers, chief execs, manager directors, boards have not had the wherewithal, bar that first season under Lambert where they stayed up, and then Houghton stayed up, didn't he, in his first season, and then they went back down. Bar that, it's been literally one step up and one step back, and they have to break that cycle. And ultimately Weber and Varka were brought to the club with a view of trying to achieve that different direction, but alas, it's looking like it's going to be no different to the previous eras and the previous management structure. So yeah, it sadly at the minute, you know, it feels quite Groundhog Day and deja vu, but we just have to hope, we have to cling to the hope that because they've tried to build the club back up from a very fragile base, and the finances are in place, and we look at what's happened to Colney, the infrastructure changes there, this emphasis on youth development as well, that you hope that there's enough solid pillars in place that with some astute tweaks to that squad this summer, that they are better placed than they have been previous years when they've gone down.
Yeah, well, do you want to just have a quick look at the scores, Pad? Let's see what Bournemouth's score was, because we were recording post match. 5-2 to United, was it? Okay,
yeah.
Right. Well,
I don't know if it finished that way, though.
Because the results don't really matter now, do they? It's Norwich have left it to the point where it doesn't really matter what the other teams do. So for me, right, let's just have a quick look then. So Leicester 3, Palace 0, United 5, Bournemouth 2. Okay, so Bournemouth's form is worse than Norwich's, yeah, I think, isn't it? Which is some feat.
I think we'll be going to the Vitality next season, boys.
Yeah, which, interesting, given the amount of money they've got behind the club. But that is going to be the next thing. I think it already quickly has turned on the live updates at Pinkham.com today, you know, immediately. It was talking about Delia and Michael, talking about we've got to get rich investors and things like that. There's going to be a lot said about that. I don't think we would expect anything imminently on that. For me, it's going to be, you know, bear in mind that we've got Daniel Farke and Stuart Webber here and for another 2 years under contract, haven't they? So I guess in an ideal world, if Stuart Webber could write the future, he would, you know, go back again as champions. And then if he leaves and goes to Spain or Germany or whatever his grand ambitions hold, it would be of Norwich secured as with a mid-table position in 2022, you know, maybe even with plans for the extension of the stadium already in the works, something like that. If he could literally lay it out like that, of course, football isn't as simple as that. But if it doesn't work out like that, if things go wrong and, you know, worst case scenario, Daniel ends up losing his job midway through last season because things are going badly and they are back where they were when Alex Neil was sat and they're back having to start again in the Championship, then I think fans are then going to be looking at the owners and saying, you know, we've got massive respect for everything you've done and a lot of love in a lot of ways, but football's changed and we need some money in this club. Because this week there were even reports that Burnley are now looking for those billionaire owners, aren't they? Because their chairman is a local guy, I think, a local businessman, and has sort of decided he's probably, him and maybe Sean Dyche as well, have taken Burnley as far as they can without changing the direction that the club is going. So it is going to be a fascinating, another, you know, it gets a bit boring talking about the ownership because it's been talked about the same owners for a lot of years, isn't it? But it is going to happen, isn't it, over this next year or two?
Yeah, of course. And I think that's probably born from the frustration, as you've mapped out there, the terms that Norwich can get to the Premier League but can't stay there. And that is going to raise issues because every time you're asking the supporters to invest in a new project or a new person or a new idea, then equally they're going to want to see that sort of bear fruit. And when they end up in the position they were when they started, then I think that there is going to be a lot of questions and a lot of concerns, and that's natural. It's probably healthy to some extent. And of course, you have to caveat it and say Norwich are an extremely well-run club if you compare what's happened to other clubs. And even, I mean, Wigan are the latest, aren't they, in administration, although that issue seems bizarre. So I think there's a lot to be thankful for in terms of the ownership, and it's just a case of what ceiling does it have and how far can Norwich go with this sort of self-finance model. And on the evidence of really the last 10 years, it's they can get to the Premier League, but staying there is the issue. And if that's the case, then how do you break that cycle? As Pad said, how do you make sure that you do become a mid-table Premier League club or a stable Premier League club that can then build the club further? And it's then an almost a progression that's quite natural. I think if you can stay in the Premier League probably for 2 years plus, and Norwich haven't been able to do that. So I mean, the questions of what could Daniel Farke do with a Premier League budget, what could Stuart Webber do in terms of the recruitment with that sort of budget is going to remain sort of unanswered for now, because they have to go back and test themselves over again. That's probably going to be quite frustrating, really, I would imagine, probably for Daniel Farke, more so the fact that perhaps he's built this team up to be an excellent Championship title winning side, and now they're going to be what the certainly have the lowest Norwich points tally, it seems, since 3 points. So that's going to be really hard for him to take. So then ask him to go again, I think, with the same energy and the same will. But they're going to have to do it, and they're going to have to try and do it. And that sort of comes back to what I said at the start in terms of next season feels really defining, because if they don't, and let's hope they do, but if they don't come straight back, then again they're going to find themselves in the position they were pre Daniel Farke and pre Stuart Webber, where they're probably looking in the mirror and going, right, where do we want this to go again? And that is going to be very difficult. And again, that'll be Delia and Michael that do exactly the same. And I think you're probably right. There is obviously a plan and a long term ambition, but at some point the supporters are going to need to see some progression in terms of the Premier League, because they can't keep having all of the positive memories in the Championship, and they are great, and it is good that those supporters get to experience that, but equally there needs to be some progression within the football club, and because it seems to just plateau and then regress and nosedive, and then it seems to come back again, and that constant cycle, whilst it is probably exciting and at times slightly exhausting, it needs to change, and they need to try and progress themselves, and equally that might mean taking a few risks in certain areas, and if that's what they have to do, then I think that there has to come a point where, particularly on the ownership side of things, they probably have to ask themselves, is it possible under what we're doing? And I think that will probably come in the next couple of years if we find ourselves back here again. But I think from Stuart Webber's perspective, from Daniel Farke's perspective, from Delia Michael's perspective, this is just another brick in the road, and this is just another sort of fall in terms of where they want to get to. And like I say, we'll see next season, we'll see in the next sort of year or two whether or not their grand idea for the football club comes to fruition, and if it doesn't, then yeah, I think those questions are going to be aimed at the board and at the owners, and you have to say it's going to be difficult to blame them, I guess, in that regard, if we're still sat here and Norwich are still sort of yo-yoing between the divisions.
And of course, Delia and Michael have made it clear on plenty of occasions that investment, or that, from their opinion, decent investment has just never been there. You know, and you've just got to look at what's going on at Wigan at the moment. I mean, Wow. If you get the club in the hands of the wrong people, it can be disastrous. And, you know, look at Hull. Hull's not that dissimilar in size to Norwich and as a football club, and their owners are, you know, real, you know, they've fallen out with the local media, their fans want rid. You know, there's so many bad examples. There's certainly more bad examples, I'd say, in this country than there are good examples. So I'm still sure that however low things got, that Delia and Michael would not sell unless they were very, very convinced that they were selling the club to someone who had the club's best interests at heart and the community's interests, best interests at heart. So there's going to be a lot more said about that over the next few years to come. Who knows? But it is a roller coaster covering Norwich. You know, there can't be another club in the country who have been up and down so much in such a short space of time, you know, a decade essentially. But the club has proved that it is capable of competing at the top level. It's just you've got to go back 30 years now, haven't you? You know, late 80s, early 90s, they finished in the top five three times, two FA Cup semi-finals. Norwich as a club is capable of it, but football has changed such a huge amount during that time, hasn't it? So I'm sure we will speak a lot more about that in the months to come. Although there's only going to be a short turnaround between seasons, isn't it? We still don't know when that will be. And looks like maybe only one of us is going to be at Watford on Tuesday night. We might have to draw the name out of a hat and see who gets that lucky trip. But come on, an Adam Eder hat trick against Burnley at Carrow Road. That's what we're all hoping for now.
Well, Watford away, I'll have to get the right Murphy now. Which one announced themselves?
Josh
in the League Cup. Absolute stupendous goal. I remember it well. And he didn't look back in terms of his Norwich career. And, you know, okay, you could say it's plateaued a bit now, but in terms of announcing yourself, and as Connor said at the outset, you know, if Adam Eder could get himself on the score sheet midweek, it's a positive element that Norwich fans badly need now, because they'll be hurting now tonight. And you know, I think even the most optimistic probably knew before a ball was kicked against Southampton that it was still a very tall order. But there was a genuine palpable sense that with the winnable games, tongue in cheek, as it's turned out, but and the points gap, this wasn't beyond them. But sadly, it's proved to be the case. So now it's, and it bleeds out of that debate we've just had about, you know, moving forward, and can they refresh, renew and reinvigorate. Then I think if we saw an Adam Eder inspired performance at Watford, ideally a win would be nice, but, you know, a positive result, score some goals, see some of the young bloods sort of stick their chest out and say, yeah, I want to be a part of this moving forward, then I think that then could roll into West Ham back here next weekend, and then the rest of the season. You know, obviously two very difficult away games to finish, Chelsea, Manchester City, but ultimately, I know, yeah. So ultimately, there's probably not going to be too many more wins, but it would. I think it's important now. Although Daniel didn't really want to be drawn on giving out gifts and planning for next season, I think he would, if you got him in a quieter moment, know that it is now about next season. And to that end, you know, let's see something different. Let's see a turning of the corner, and then those fans, however long that close season period is, can at least go into it with a little bit of optimism. Because if it goes the other way, what we had now, five Premier League defeats, we've got five Premier League games left. If they end up 10-0, then I'm afraid they're immediately on the back foot for me at the start of next season.
Yeah, that would shatter any momentum and sort of credit in the bank to a certain extent. So let's sincerely hope that we don't get to that. But obviously, you couldn't see, but when Paddy mentioned Chelsea and Manchester City away games, I put my hand over my face in a disconsolate way. Which I think is probably the right point to end the pod on. chaps, thank you very much for reliving all that fun. Thank you very much for listening. You can also hear us on Future Radio 107.8 FM. If you're not already subscribed to the pod, then please do. We'll be here throughout, whatever happens, week in, week out, rain or shine. We will be covering Norwich City, and we always want to hear from you as well, so please do get in touch with us, any of the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can get us at the Pinken account. Any ratings and reviews also very welcome. But for now, a 1-0 defeat to Brighton leaves us heading all back to the Championship, as I think your headline said on the report at pinken.com, Connor, sliding back to the Championship, and that unfortunately is how it feels.